Okay, here we are with another episode of the High Ground powered by Premier Companies. Morning, Sal.
Morning, Ryan.
Hey, we have a new guest with us today.
We do.
Yes, we're excited to welcome Courtney Kingery into the studio today. So you want to go ahead and give us your title real quick before we get kicked off here?
Absolutely. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me. I am CEO of the Indiana Soybean Alliance, Indiana Corn Marketing Council, and Indiana Corn Growers Association.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining us. And you're an esteemed guest that still doesn't get to skip the question of the day.
Nobody does.
So, you ready for this, Sal?
No, this is a hard one.
You really think so?
I thought
this one was easy. So, all right. Question of the day for you. Courtney, we're going to kick it off. What are your top three movie recommendations?
So, I'm going to go a bit old school.
Okay.
16 Candles.
Okay. Nice.
Wizard of Oz.
Classic.
And Goonies.
The Goonies.
Nice. Nice.
I didn't think about that one.
I didn't think about that one either. So.
What have been some of the other ones?
Huh?
What have been some of the other ones?
Oh,
what
we
did
have
you
a different
think?
Question all the time.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, yeah. It's a different question every time. So, this is the first one. But we could do the truffle shuffle to start this instead of the question of the day. We can just start doing the truffle shuffle.
There we go.
What is that?
I don't know. Just you have to watch it.
Okay.
If you're not familiar with it, you'll just have to watch it. So, all right. Well, and of those three, what would be your favorite?
Depends on my mood.
Okay. All right.
I have to say Goonies is the one that I will watch over and over and over again with my husband. And we were out in the Pacific Northwest for an American Soybean Association meeting. And we actually went to Mikey's house. We saw Mikey's house. We saw where they had it. We went to
really?
The beach where in the last scene, the pirate ship comes out.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've kind of done the Goonies
That's
tour in
cool.
the Pacific Northwest.
That is really cool. Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah.
I like the movie.
Them monkeys creep me out though.
Oh, and the Wizard of Oz. Oh,
Wizard of Oz monkeys are creepy.
Yeah. So we just had this conversation this weekend on a trip to a graduation party. And we were talking about a person who has a collection of Wizard of Oz stuff. And my son's like, they have the flying monkeys and they're pretty disturbing. So, yeah.
Just a big nope.
Everybody feels the same way about the flying monkeys. So, Sal, what's your three movie recommendations?
A little different direction. I like The Outlaw of Josie Wales, Clint Eastwood. That was always a neat one for me. And then Patton with George C. Scott. That was a really good one, and followed the book really close too on that one. And then one that's just came out, it was only a few years back, Midway, and the special effects were awesome. I don't know about the acting, but it was a really good story about the Battle of Midway and the events before leading up to it. And the movie itself was a bomb. I mean, no pun intended, but it had a $100 million budget and only grossed like 125, 130, but a really good movie. Great special effects.
Wow. Well, cool. Well, I think mine would be, Shawshank Redemption. I like Shawshank. Yeah.
Oh,
I like
Andy.
That one.
Andy.
Yeah.
A lot of things went wrong, Andy.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. I love that movie. And then any of the vacation movies, probably Christmas Vacation would be the one I would lead with. I sort of like Cousin Eddie, and that's just a great.
That's one you got to. That's one if it's on, you're going to watch it for.
Well, it's like Shawshank too. Yeah. It's like even if it's 2 hours in, you're like, well, I'll go ahead and run this out. I'll go ahead and see the end of it. And then one that's probably not as prevalent, but I absolutely love the movie. My wife does not like it at all. But Secondhand Lions. If you've not seen Secondhand Lions, it is a great movie. Yeah, it absolutely is a great movie.
That scene with the salesman that comes back out for the second time.
Yes.
He's crazy. You got to shoot him.
Yeah, I love it. What a great movie. So, that's one I sometimes have to watch by myself. Carla's not,
good ones.
Not as big a fan of that one. So, anyway, all right. Well, let's get started with this. So, let's start from the beginning with you. How did you get here? Let's talk about birthplace and education, career path, and all of that stuff.
I jokingly say I'm an accidental Aggie. Family has a farm in Monticello, White County, Indiana.
Yeah.
My family's been there for about five or six generations. We're still doing the math back on that. Story goes, we were the first land grant family in the area. And so that has been in my family that whole time. It actually, and I'm really proud of this, came down through my grandmother. So my father's mother, she received the portion of the farm as part of her wedding gift when she married my grandfather. So my grandfather moved to her farm and started farming her farm. And then it passed to my father, and now my father's passed, so it's passed to my mother and I. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Really cool. So that's, I love that. My grandmother's been a huge influence. She passed before I was born, but she was a school teacher. She went to college. You know, this was in the 1920s, went to college. She went over to Ohio, lived on her own with another lady, was a school teacher on her own in the 1920s. So when you think about
a strong woman
in that time period. So I actually have her college diploma hanging on my wall in my house. So she's just been a tremendous influence on me that I've never met. I've never met her. When I was looking at schools and looking at going to college, some of your listeners may appreciate, my dad said he would help me pay for to go to any school in Indiana except for IU. He went to Purdue. My grandfather went to Purdue. I applied to both Purdue and Hanover College, which my grandfather was involved with. Hanover College, ended up going to Hanover College down in southern Indiana, studied economics there, was actually planning on going to law school. So there was never a discussion about coming back to the farm or getting into agriculture. I was planning on going to law school, of all things. It was the day of graduation, back in the day when we still actually got physical mail. And there was an offer for this company called Archer Daniels Midland, ADM. I had interviewed with them. Only company I interviewed with while I was in college. Offered for me a position in their commodity merchandising group. So being the economist that I was, I did the math and I said I can work for 3 years for ADM as a merchandiser, or I can go to law school and rack up a whole lot of debt. So the economist in me said it's an easy choice. Went to work for ADM in their merchandising training program, and then had the real pleasure of having a 17-year career with ADM. Went up through that, left as the marketing manager for their specialty food ingredients group on the oil seed side, and went over to an organization, a company called Tate & Lyle, which many of you guys know this. They've gone through some evolutions now, partially spun off for Premient. So I was able to be with Tate & Lyle for about 7 years. I left. I was leading a product portfolio there of their health and wellness products. When I came in, it was about an $8 million business. When it left, I grew it to about a $100 million business. Global director of their health and wellness portfolios. We had plants in the U.S., two in Europe, and one in China. So I was working with our manufacturing and sales teams to grow that portfolio. And then I had the opportunity to come back home. They call us boomerang Hoosiers, that we left and then we come back home. So I had the opportunity to come back home and lead this organization. And I'm absolutely thrilled to be here working for the 20,000 corn and soybean farmers in Indiana. When I was interviewing for this role, the headhunter, the guy conducting the interviews before it went to the board, he asked me, he said, you know, you're working for this global company. Why do you want to come back to Indiana and work for this not-for-profit? And I said, it's because I'm sitting at my mother's dining room table as she recovers from a double mastectomy from her second bout of breast cancer. I said, it's time for me to come home. It's time for me to come home. So she is fully recovered. She is free and clear. So we're absolutely thrilled about that. And it's absolutely wonderful to be back home in Indiana. Great.
You back in the Monticello area?
I'm in Indianapolis area, so our offices are in Indianapolis. So I'm in the Indianapolis area, but it's wonderful to be, you know, an hour and a half. We can be back at mom's at the farm, so sure. It's wonderful.
For sure.
Well, so Indiana's, explain the three companies, and this used to be three separate, kind of. So explain the CEO of how they all came together. And kind of what they are independently and now together.
Absolutely. So they are three distinct organizations with three different board of directors. So there's about 50 farmers who are on these three boards as board of directors. And they represent different work within the state of Indiana and nationally and even internationally. So the Indiana Soybean Alliance and Indiana Corn Marketing Council are the checkoff organizations for corn and soybeans within the state of Indiana. And so those are the checkoff organizations that, as your listeners know, every bushel of corn or soybeans sold here within the state of Indiana, a small portion of that comes together to those checkoff funds to do three pieces of work. They do education, promotion, and research. So education, promotion, and research. Checkoff dollars cannot be used for lobbying or to influence legislators. So those boards are a fully voluntary board of directors. They are not compensated for their time, and they are elected from the farmers of the state of Indiana. So it is farmer dollars that are overseen by volunteer farmers who determine how and what projects those dollars are going to be invested into. So it's a fully volunteer board. They decide how those checkoff dollars are going to be spent. And they do work in three areas. So the first one being market development, that's got the biggest piece of the budget. We call that move the pile. Indiana's really good at growing corn and soybeans in the state. And thanks to a lot of, you know, your agronomist, a lot of the work that you guys do, Indiana farmers are getting better and better every year at growing corn and soybeans here in the state. And so the work of market development, the board says, move the pile. We're really good at growing it. We need to find more and more markets, either domestically or internationally. And we can talk about some of those projects. The second one is around sustainability. I saw in your lobby, you've got signs around sustainability, how to do more with less, how to grow more corn and soybeans, feed more animals with less water, less inputs, less chemicals, less, you know, pesticides, fertilizer. Indiana continues to lead the country in that. I was recently talking with a salesperson who happens to sell food ingredients into Nestle. Nestle is the biggest food company in the world. And he asked me, how many acres of Indiana use some sort of sustainable or regenerative ag practice? And I said, nearly every single one of them. Every single acre in Indiana uses either cover crops or no-till or some sort of water management or precision ag for our type of conservation program in some way, shape, or form. And depending on where they are in the state, you guys know, depending on where they are, it may be different based on their soil and what they need. But every farmer in Indiana takes care of their soil in some way, shape, or form. And I'm so proud about that. So it's about that sustainability piece. And we call it economic, environmental, and social sustainability. Because if farmers are going to be doing these practices, there's an economic incentive also that's important as well. It's got to be economically feasible for them. And the social is about being good neighbors. You know, farmers of Indiana are historically good neighbors, and that's what we consider that social sustainability. Telling the story of agriculture, only 2% of Indiana Hoosiers are related to agriculture and on the farms now. So how do you tell that story to the 98% of folks who may not know much about agriculture? So that's what we call sustainability. The next one is producer engagement. There's 20,000 corn and soybean farmers in Indiana, and how do we engage with as many of them as we can to tell a story about checkoff and to show and bring value back to the farm? And then value creation, which is something that's really interesting and exciting and people like to talk about. These are things like new uses for corn and soybeans. So they may be small volume, whereas move the pile is big volume. Value creation may be small volume, but super high value products. Oftentimes, those might be food ingredients or petroleum replacements or really specific and unique molecules and chemicals that come out of the soybean oil or the corn starch that can be used for other uses. Small volume, really big value. And so that's the work that the checkoffs do in those four areas. Now compare that against our Growers Association, and that's Indiana Corn Growers, and that's the membership and policy portion of the Indiana Soybean Alliance. Farmers pay membership dues to be part of those organizations, so that's a dues-paying organization. Farmers can opt in to that. And then we also have sponsorships in that. So folks like yourself who are sponsors of that organization at certain events or of our magazine or of our newsletters. So it's dollars that come from dues and sponsorships and advertising on that side.
Okay. Very nice.
The checkoff, that's something you had said your listeners are familiar with that. And that's actually outside of growers. A lot of folks aren't familiar with with checkoff, and you did great at explaining how it's used and how it can't be used. A couple questions. How much is it, I guess? How much is the checkoff? When did it start? So that's one, two questions. And then where can you find like a grower, if a grower asks, and it's neat that they can find out who their board members are, but if a grower asks to find it, is there a spot where the grower can find it, how it's used? Because that's really neat how you broke this out into education and research and how it's used.
It absolutely great question. So corn, two different checkoffs. We've got a soybean checkoff. That's a federal checkoff. That checkoff is federally mandated to, it is a half of a percent of the selling price of soybeans here in the state. And then of that, half of that goes to the United Soybean Board, which is the national organization, and half of that stays here within the state. So if you do the math, a half of a half, a quarter of a percent stays in the state, and a quarter of a percent goes to the United Soybean Board. And the United Soybean Board, similar to the state checkoff, has, I want to say, 77, 78 farmer leaders who oversee the United Soybean Board.
So it's not much for a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
It's not much for a lot.
It's about a candy bar an acre.
Wow.
Is all it is. The corn checkoff, that's a half of a penny per bushel here in the state of Indiana. And that goes to the Indiana Corn Marketing Council, and all of that stays here within the state. So again, when we talk to the farmer board and when the farmers say, you know, why do you guys get involved with this? Why is it so important to you to be a part of these boards? They say exactly what you said of, it's not much to be able to do a lot. What we bring to the farmers is we are their marketing, their advertising, their promotion arm that they don't have to pay for. So it's the farmers of Indiana coming together to promote international trade, ethanol, biodiesel, renewable diesel. I was standing out in your lobby and you guys have this bumper sticker from the Indiana Soybean Alliance that says, I'm fueled with soy biodiesel. You know, that's the kind of thing that we do. We partner with the entire value chain. So with the processors, with the co-ops, with the grain companies, the entire value chain to promote Indiana corn and soybeans. Now, where folks want to learn more about it, we've just relaunched our website as well. So it's incornandsoy.org. So incornandsoy.com, all one. On that, they can see the stories about
the .com or .org?
.org.
Okay. All right.
.org.
Okay.
Thank you. We say the future is ours to grow. And on that, they can get stories. They can see it. They can follow us on social media. So we've got Facebook, LinkedIn, and on the website, they can also sign up for the magazine. We have Indiana Corn and Soy Post. It goes out to about 12,000 farmers around the state, free of charge, comes out every other month. And in that, it talks about the policy work that the association does, and it talks about the checkoff programs as well. So it's a great one-stop shop to see what all the organizations are doing. Free of charge, anybody can sign up for it and can receive that. And finally, I would say, if your listeners are interested, the farmers are elected out of their districts. There are opportunities to run for the boards, especially the checkoff boards, every year. And if they're interested, reach out to us. We'd love to send them an application. The requirement is they do have to sell corn and soybeans, so have a financial stake of selling corn and soybeans here in the state and run for the board and get involved to participate.
Yep. That's the best way.
That's right. That's right. The future is charted by those of us who show up, so participate. We'd love to have them.
That's awesome. That's well Thank said. You.
Very well said. So let's go back to your high value products just a little bit, and we think about these large commodities that we've got. You've got at least a couple of initiatives that we want to talk about. So give us some insight on your high oleic initiative that you've got going.
High oleic is a great, great story about how Checkoff is working for the farmers of the United States, and specifically the farmers of Indiana. Indiana is the number one producing high oleic soybean state in the world. Wow. More high oleic soybeans are grown in Indiana than at any other place in the world. And this has been, high oleic soybeans have returned about $100 million worth of premiums back to the farmers of Indiana. So if you think about, right, those Checkoff, it's about, call it, you know, roughly a candy bar or a candy bar and a Coke per acre, and it's returned $100 million in premiums back to the farmers of Indiana. That's a pretty significant return. And one of the ways and one of the reasons why high oleic's been so successful is because how the Checkoff dollars and the Indiana Soybean Alliance have been promoting high oleic out in the marketplace. So we've got partnerships. If anybody's been watching the Pacers and Gainbridge Fieldhouse, you know, the Pacers are doing a great run right now. Yep. Great, great season so far. The Indiana Soybean Alliance partnered with Gainbridge Fieldhouse. So beyond the Pacers, Gainbridge Fieldhouse has about 300 events at Gainbridge Fieldhouse a year. Can you guys guess? Here's a trivia question back to you. Can you guess the number one food that is sold at Gainbridge Fieldhouse during events?
Popcorn?
I say popcorn.
No. Chicken strips. Chicken tenders.
Really?
Everyone.
That's why the guests aren't allowed to ask questions. Obviously, she didn't read
we
the contract.
I must not have read that. So it is chicken tenders, and every one of those chicken tenders are getting fried in high oleic soybean oil, and the French fries are getting fried in high oleic soybean oil.
So let's stop for our guests that may not know, and those who are health conscious and love to read labels and understand what's going on with this. What's high oleic have to offer?
So high oleic soybeans are a specific type of soybeans that was developed by Corteva right here in Indiana. So these are soybeans that have been developed by Corteva right here in Indiana. They are available from Pioneer. And they are a soybean that when you process that soybean for the soybean oil, right? Soybeans can get processed into soybean oil and soybean meal. The meal is typically used for animal feed. The soybean oil can go a lot of different places, but one of them is into food, food service, food prep, deep frying, salad dressings, all of those things. High oleic soybean oil has some unique characteristics in that it has a higher smoke point and it lasts longer. So why do folks like Gainbridge Fieldhouse and a lot of the restaurants and Purdue and IU and the Indianapolis Indians all like to use high oleic is because it lasts longer in the fryers. It can last 2-3 days longer, which doesn't sound like a whole lot, but think about how many chicken tenders get fried over 300. Mm. It's an opportunity for Gainbridge to use less oil. They're transporting less oil. They're moving less oil. When we talked to the chef at Gainbridge, he said the food tastes better. It's fried better. We were doing a tour of Gainbridge, and it was the fry guy. You know, every one of those concession stands has a guy in the back running the fryers. He didn't know us from Adam. Oh. And we asked him, we said, hey, you've been using this new oil a couple of days ago. He said, yeah. The boss switched out the oil on me, and I got some new oil here. And we said, well, what'd you think about it? He said, well, it does a couple different things. Number one, my fryer's a lot cleaner, so it's easier for me to close down at the end of the day. And he said, it seems like it's frying a lot hotter and the fries are getting done faster. So I'm able to keep up with the orders and my boss isn't yelling at me to get more fries out. So I'm able to keep up with the customer orders.
Did you say I did that?
I did not. I said, great. Thank you to the farmers of Indiana.
You're welcome.
Well, yeah. Glad we could help you.
It's also considered a heart healthy oil. By having that high oleic, it's cholesterol free. It's a heart healthy oil. And so when folks go to Gainbridge, right? 300 events a year, everything from, you know, Disney on Ice to monster trucks to Pacers. And people are standing in line at the concession stand to get their chicken tenders and their French fries. There's a great big sign right there that talks about In Indiana, we grow soybeans, and high oleic soybean oil brought to you by the farmers of Indiana. And so if you think about the Pacers and their tagline is "We grow basketball," they have additional signage that says "We grow soybeans," brought to you by the Indiana Soybean Alliance. Cool. So it's those kinds of really high profile events. We've got a partnership with the Indianapolis Indians. We've got a partnership, IU and Purdue, at their sporting events. All of that is fried in high oleic soybean oil. So it's a great story of soybeans developed here in Indiana, planted by Indiana farmers, delivering $100 million of premiums, used at really high profile Indiana venues. And then layer on top of that, just this past weekend for the Indianapolis 500 and leading up to that, we hosted 120 international buyers of soybean oil and soybeans from around the world. So there are 14 different countries that were represented, and it was the number one or number two soybean buyer at each one of those countries.
Wow.
And they were here in Indiana, going to farms, seeing how soybeans are being planted, how they're grown. They went to Purdue University to learn about research, Corteva to learn about research. And then they culminated with what we call the Soybean Oil Masters graduation ceremony. So these are all folks that have gone through at least a day of training in their home country to learn about and develop a preference for U.S.-grown soybeans and U.S.-grown soybean oil. Your listeners know our number one competition in the market right now is Brazil, right?
Yep.
And so how do we position the U.S. against Brazilian soybeans? And we brought 120 buyers in to talk about not just U.S. soybeans, but how Indiana soybeans are some of the best in the world and how we're proud about that.
Great.
That is a really cool story.
Yeah.
So also there's other the biofuels. So it's like kind of like, but wait, there's more, right?
Can't eat them all.
Can't eat them all, right? So we can put them in fuel. And this is a great story too, because it's not food versus fuel. It's food and fuel. Because when you're creating, the animal feed or the meal or the cornstarch, you also have this oil. We're not going to eat all of the oil. So how do we also find additional markets for it? And biofuels is a great way to do that, both on the ethanol side with corn and promoting higher blends of corn, ethanol into fuel. So unleaded 88, E15, which is 15% ethanol. Nearly every car on the road right now can burn unleaded 88. And that is a clean burning, lower cost fuel. So, you know, all of us are feeling some pinches in our wallet right now as we start to see prices go up and continue to see prices go up. So unleaded 88 is a great choice that is clean burning fuel that also is lower on the wallet. And I think some of your retailers and some of your facilities, we've been out some ribbon cuttings where you guys offer unleaded 88. So great partners on that front. So thank you for that. And then on the diesel side, where we talk about biodiesel, we've got a project and a group called B20, which is a B20 club. And those are municipalities that have made a commitment to run 20%, a blend of 20% biodiesel in their diesel fuel. And one of our great partners that we have on that is Andretti IndyCar and Andretti Global. So you think about Andretti, right? And the race cars and the racing and coming off of the Indianapolis 500 weekend this week. They also are leaders in sustainability and wanting to not just win on the racetrack, but win in the long term and make sustainable choices and be leaders in that sustainability story. So they've made a commitment to be a part of the B20 club, and they are running their tractor trailers. And when they're driving these amazing race cars and drivers and equipment all over the country, they're burning biodiesel, 20% biodiesel blend in their fleets as well. So it's just a great, great partnership that we have with Andretti to promote Indiana agriculture as they are going all over the United States, driving that, and really all over the world.
Did they approach you for that? Or did you isolate a race team? I don't guess the racing ever came to mind. That's a great play. How did that happen?
A little bit of both. So the Corn Marketing Council has had this long-term view of how do we promote racing, or how do we promote Indiana agriculture? Indiana Soybean Alliance had a similar thought of how do we promote Indiana agriculture to those 98% of folks who maybe don't know that much about it. And so we started thinking about coming up with all of these creative ideas. Elena Jetty is my director of biofuels for the Indiana Soybean Alliance, Indiana Corn Marketing Council. She brought this idea to me probably about 3 years ago and said, hey, what do we think about racing and thinking about IMS? IMS has made some commitments around sustainability as well. And when you think about what makes Indiana unique, IMS comes to mind for a lot of folks, right? We have the largest single sporting event in the world
here. The
greatest
spectacle of race.
You got it. You got it. So why don't we bring together some of these creative ideas about how to do this? And when you think about this, and with Andretti recently announcing that they're going to continue to stay in Indiana, they're going to build their new facility, I think it is in Fishers, here in the next couple of years, they seem like a really maybe non-traditional, but really interesting partner to partner with to bring the Andretti name, their commitments to Indiana, their commitments to sustainability, to this story, and to the work of the Indiana Soybean Alliance. So it's coming out. This is our first year. It just launched here about 4 or 5 weeks ago. So this is our first year doing it. And I have been really, really pleased with the results of that. And the Andretti IndyCar Group is just a great group to work with and just so thoughtful in bringing some opportunities to the table for us to promote Indiana agriculture to folks who maybe don't know that much about it.
Great.
Well, that makes a lot of sense then, because those are not things that you would normally connect, the soybeans and Andretti. Andretti is, that name has got more name recognition, I think, than any other in racing probably, and certainly got a lot of, it goes back a long time, mm-hmm. and but that's the whole purpose of what you're trying to do.
Absolutely.
Is to connect just markets and non-use and customers and to get new people involved and curious about what we're doing. So that is really neat.
Yep. We're absolutely, absolutely thrilled with the partnership.
That sounds good. So international trade and partnerships, what about your recent trade missions that you've made? Where you been?
Been feels like all over. What's the song? I've been everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Johnny Cash. That's right.
That's a little bit what it feels like. I've had the opportunity to do some really great trade teams here recently. One of them was part of a USDA, U.S. Department of Ag trade team with Undersecretary Alexis Taylor. So I was invited to go on to that trade team, and we went to India. And I've actually been to India twice in about 5 or 6 weeks.
Wow.
Which is a lot, but it speaks to the importance of the market in India. So it really speaks to the importance. A couple of things have happened recently in India that is really opening up that market for U.S. commodities and what made it so important. The first one is that the Indian government has said that they want to move to a 20% ethanol blend in their auto fuel by 2025, 2026. So a 20% ethanol blend. In the United States, we are only required to be at a 10% ethanol blend. So they're saying they want to use double the percentage inclusion than what we even have here in the United States. And the reason for that is because ethanol burns so clean, like we talked about on Leaded 88, burns clean. And so they really see an opportunity to be leading in clean burning fuels for their vehicles. It also reduces the cost of the fuel into the consumer. So they're seeing it both to lower the price and have clean burning fuels. So a 20% ethanol blend. So there's a tremendous opportunity. They have an ethanol production there in India, just started producing corn-based ethanol, but it's a new market and their infrastructure is not enough to meet the demand for the ethanol that they're going to need to meet that 20% target. So tremendous opportunity for corn from the U.S. and corn from India, or corn from Indiana, to go into India. The other piece is they recently reduced the tariffs just within the past month or so on turkey and duck. So they had a 30% import tariff on both of those products coming into the country. That's been recently reduced to only 5%. So from 30% to 5%.
And we raise a few of those.
We raise a few of those here in Indiana. We're number one in duck. We're, I don't know, top five, call it, in turkey. We're down here in southern Indiana. A lot of turkeys down here in southern Indiana. So that's a tremendous market opportunity, brand new market opportunity for poultry products going into India. So both of those fit under, right, that market development, move in the pile. If we move more turkey, if we move more ducks, that means more turkey and more ducks are eating corn and soybeans, and we're getting those into those new and emerging markets. So that was right. That was that piece. I also had the ability to and invited to go with Governor Holcomb on his recent trade missions to Mexico and Brazil. So that was his first ag trade mission that he had ever done. And he spent an entire week promoting Indiana agriculture in Mexico and Brazil. Now, I have to say, I was reluctant. We talked about Brazil's our number one competitor. Why in the world are we going to Brazil to promote Indiana agriculture? We don't want to do that. We don't want to make them better. But it actually turned around the other way. We were able to have great conversations around ethanol. There's a 15% tariff on U.S. ethanol going into Brazil. The U.S. does not have any tariff on Brazilian ethanol coming in. That seems a little backwards to me.
It does seem a lot, didn't it?
So we had the opportunity to meet with Ambassador Bagley. She is the U.S. ambassador into Brazil. And we said, this can't be. We can't have a 15% tariff on U.S. ethanol going into Brazil. And she said, we absolutely agree. It's one of my number one ag priorities is to get that lifted. We had conversations with the USDA Foreign Ag Service, and they said, while they can't make any commitments, they said they're in the best place that they think we've been in a long time to address those tariffs. So that 15% tariff, they're really looking at and pushing hard on that. And so that's a tremendous opportunity for us. Exports, Brazil used to be one of our biggest customers for ethanol here out of the U.S., and those that demand's gone to almost zero with this tariff the past couple of years. So we were able to address that in Brazil. The other thing we had in Brazil was the Brazilian ag market is really strong in ag startups. There's a lot of ag startups down there, which is really interesting to talk to them. Now, Brazil has a very different growing cycle, right? Your folks have heard about the safrinha corn, the double crop. It's a tropical environment, so very different from an agronomics perspective. But having conversations with those startups, they're very interested in coming to the U.S. So we had a group of about 25-ish startups that we met with. We identified six that we thought might have technology that could apply to U.S. farming and U.S. agriculture. So we're working to see, can we do some sort of showcase to bring those six technologies up here and let farmers take a look at those and see what those may bring. So if there's any, you know, if we can do a little bit of reverse and bring anything that comes out of Brazil and apply it here to help our farmers be better, that could be a really good win for us, right? So that was on the Brazil side. So a lot of opportunities to actually bring some thoughts out of there. We met with Corteva while we were in Brazil. They've got big operations there. Elanco has big operations there. Eli Lilly has big operations there. So we met with a lot of Indiana companies. And really the takeaway was the world's big enough for all of us. We need to be sure GM crops have access. We need to be sure GM products have access around the globe. And as the world continues to grow, 95% of consumers are outside of the United States. As the world continues to grow, the world needs Indiana corn and soybeans. They need it. They need it all, right? There's a lot of people who are hungry in the world. So how can we do that better? Mexico, switching gears, we went back to Mexico. Indiana Corn Soybeans sponsored a reception at Ambassador Salazar's residence, which was great. It brought a lot of the buyers and the supply chain together. And Mexico just this year surpassed China as the U.S.'s number one trading partner. So it's great to have that trading partner, you know, close by our neighbors, yeah. Right? It's like, hey, we're trading with our neighbors. This is a good thing. They're in our number one trading partner now. So bringing those partners together along the ag supply chain, having some conversations with them, meeting with them of how can we grow this? How can we continue to grow this? We also had an opportunity to meet with the Secretary of Economies, is her title. And it's in Spanish. So it's a, you know, not my great translation, but her translated title, Secretary of the Economies. She talked about the GM corn decree that Mexico's put some limitations on GM white corn coming from the U.S. She addressed that directly, saying that they still value U.S. trade. They value U.S. trade of corn. And they think that there is enough white corn grown in Mexico to meet their needs. Now, the U.S. does have a trade dispute on with them, so that's working through the process. So we'll see where that goes. But I'm hopeful that under USMCA, we'll see that maybe their stance wasn't completely based in science, and we'll get some relief, especially down here in southern Indiana. We got a lot of white corn farmers down here, and get some relief for some of those white corn farmers to open up that Mexican market back for them.
That'd be good.
Yeah, yeah, especially the farther south you go, it seems like it gets a lot more. Well, I think that kind of brings us to a good spot about what about the farmers? What should they be aware of right now, I guess, in the industry about what's happening with sustainability? Because it certainly seems like that's driving with India. That'll be huge. Is there any other things globally that's going on that farmers should just be in the know, or should they just get the newsletter and the magazine and stay engaged?
Well, I would say a couple things on sustainability. First off, as I said, we had 120 international buyers from 14 countries. And when I had the opportunity to present to them about the checkoff organizations and what the farmers were doing on sustainability, they had a lot of questions about deforestation. The European Union has put out some requirements around deforestation and not wanting to purchase deforested corn and soybeans. And their question was, how do we know if we're buying soybeans that it's not deforested soybeans? And I said, it's a really simple answer. Buy U.S. soybeans.
Buy U.S. soybeans.
Buy U.S. soybeans. Absolutely. And everyone kind of laughed. I said,
well, how true is it? I mean, where's that ground coming from in South America? We all know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But beyond that, we also, through the U.S. Soybean Export Council, USEC, they have a certification that international buyers can buy certified U.S. sustainably grown soybeans. So, you know, it's not just a, hey, buy U.S. soybeans. And we've got the paperwork. We've got the documentation. We've got the piece of paper to back it up for you. So I would say to the farmers around sustainability, keep doing what you're doing. Keep trying stuff. If something's not working, you know, cover crops are a great example. It takes, what, 3, 4, 5 years to really start to see the returns. It's kind of hard the first year or so. If it was easy, everybody would be doing it. If farming was easy, everybody would be doing it. But Indiana farmers especially, they are problem solvers. They know what it is to do the right thing. Keep doing it. If you have questions, talk to your extension agent, talk to your agronomist, talk to folks, get some help. But keep doing what you're doing on nutrient management, water management, cover crops. Keep doing those things. Keep trying things out and ask for help. Talk to your neighbors, talk to your buddies, work through that. But continue to stay on that sustainability, because we're starting to see it transitioning now that it's now becoming table stakes to have access to markets. So keep doing what you're doing. The other piece is get involved. You know, get the magazine, sign up for the magazine, sign up for the newsletter. My email address is on the website. Reach out to me, send me an email, give me a phone call, run for the boards. Love to have folks who are involved to run for the boards. We're here. We are your organizations for the farmers of Indiana. And I love working for these folks.
Well, that's great. And you think about the marketing that every company does for their products. I mean, we pay teams of people to market these products, find new markets, to promote what we're doing. We make a change in a process. We want to drive it forward. And farmers have to have that same help. And it's just tremendous that we can have this conversation and show a few of the things that you're doing, big things that you're doing to drive that, just build some value.
Absolutely.
Because we're good at growing it.
Good at growing it.
Just got to get rid of it.
Just got to get rid of it.
Get as much as we can. Yeah, get as much as we can for it. So Anything else, Sal?
No, I just think it's been a really nice session here, and this has been a nice podcast.
Yeah, hopefully you come back.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Anytime.
We'd love to have it. Have this conversation regularly, because I'm certain that your initiatives don't stop here, and you're probably looking for the next thing today.
Exactly it. We've got board meetings coming up in June. In June, the board's going to be looking at programs for next year, projects and programs for next year, and getting those finalized. The board's always looking at what's next, what's next, what's next.
Sure. Well, let's come back and talk about them. Later this year. So, Courtney Keery, thank you very much for joining us. And that's another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Please like and subscribe.
Thanks, Courtney.
Thank you.
Thank you.